What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
In my hand first, I want to talk about this. The racket on tour with tennis's golden generation and the other 99%. It is written by Conor Nyland, former Irish professional tennis player, and he is with me in studio. Conor, you're welcome to the show.
Great
Thanks
to be here.
Thanks a million for joining us. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
First of all, out in the world now a few weeks.
Yeah.
Was it daunting?
Yeah, it was. It was funny. It was June the 6th, and that had been the big day from whatever Christmas when they announced it. And then I started to get texts about 4 or 5 days before saying, here, I see your book in the shop here. And I was like, oh, okay, it's out in the world. So it's a little bit of a, it got out there a couple of days early. So I watched that sort of night before the 6th going, oh my God, people are going to start reading it. And the big thing for me was sending it to my family, I guess, at Christmas, and they all loved it. And that was, you know, that was the big one for me.
Well, actually, family plays a big part in it. Maybe we'll talk about that. There's different aspects of it that, I think will resonate with people, you know, about the sacrifices and kind of where your worlds kind of cross the worlds of these tennis greats that we all know the name of. But, you know, family features very early, and the sacrifices as well that parents make and how laser focused your parents have to be.
Yeah, well, we say it in the book that, you know, tennis players come as a package deal with their parents. Yeah. You know, you don't necessarily ask your mum and dad at 5 or 6 to go down and, you know, enroll yourself in tennis lessons. Then all of a sudden, if you want to be an elite European level junior, you're going to tennis tournaments around Europe at 11 or 12. And again, that's something that is sort of a decision made for you. You don't know the path. And yeah, you're not sort of sent down like in a sports team two, three days a week and sort of enroll and build it that way. It has to be quite intense quite early with tennis. And yeah, we obviously go into that in a lot of depth in the book.
Yeah, and I guess it will resonate maybe with people to a degree because we're so used to seeing or would have been Richard Williams up in the stands and Judy Murray with Andy Murray as well.
They're like the Pep Guardiolas and Jose Mourinhos of tennis, you know, in the players' box during Wimbledon, you know, after every third point, the camera's panning up to these mums and dads, and they've got the you know, the branded clothing on, and, you know, they're part of the team. And often it's because they're a cheaper alternative, certainly, and you're starting out in your career. If you have a mother or father who can travel with you, that is a lot easier than having to pay a coach X amount of money a year and having to pay for their expenses. So it kind of works out. And then once they have a little bit of success at the age of 20 or 21, the parents have almost established themselves in the coaching team and they sort of continue on the payroll. So it's a quite a unique sort of relationship.
Well, what's also unique as well is the journey to professionalism. And you kind of touched on it there about going off on these kind of junior tours and playing these tournaments around Europe from so young. And it's so different from, you know, if you think of professional golf, and people tend to stay around Ireland that bit longer. You know, the environment is there, and even athletics. My sisters ran in the Olympics, so I would have seen a bit of this. But there, you know, there is no kind of, they're going off as part of teams.
Yeah,
and
it's
all packaged and off you go, and it's all taken care of to a degree until you get to adult level. There's nothing like this. This is utterly unique.
Yeah, I think the junior tour in tennis has a lot at stake, because when you go to these major international events, they have these management companies that are there that can make your transition to pro tennis so much easier. So if they see somebody winning the world championships under 14, all of a sudden IMG or somebody will come in and say, well, we'll bring you to our academy. You know, you'll be all expenses paid in terms of training and transition you into pro tennis. And everybody knows that. And as you say, I was going to these major European events, the number one in Ireland, and then seeing that I'm talented, but I'm not as extravagantly talented as some of these. You know, there's a big difference between being 30 in Europe and number one or number two in Europe, and you see that very quickly.
Mm.
So yeah, it's an unbelievably competitive global sport. And it starts really early.
The gap between the haves and the have-nots is huge in tennis. It seems huge.
Yeah, it falls off a cliff, you know, outside the top 100. And I spent my career I suppose most of it between, say, 100 and 250 in the world. My highest ranking was 129, which meant that I got the opportunity to be at the same tournaments as these guys in the locker rooms with them and played Wimbledon US Open, but, you know, was not on the tour at the top level all the time. So what's great about this book, and I think what's an interesting perspective, is showing this world of the main tour, because I got that access, but also showing you what the futures and challenger level is like. So it's a kind of unique insight where I'm able to bridge those two worlds.
Because again, and I think there'll be lots of people listening to this and they're probably like me. My wife would watch tennis every week of the year. And I probably am like those people who kind of zone in four times a year.
The next 2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, for the next 2 weeks. Yeah, exactly. With Wimbledon starting on Monday. And I kind of, in my mind, maybe I compare it to golf because I think of both individual sports. But even the possibility for remuneration is totally different. You can be kind of number 129 in golf and you'd have a decent tournament and you could take home a couple of hundred grand and you're kind of set for the rest of the year.
Yeah,
totally different.
There's no comparison actually between the prize money in the golf. And I do think golf is a little bit more American-centric than tennis. It's not quite as global. So I think it's not quite as competitive at an international level.
Yeah.
But there's also, you've got your tours, you've got your European tour, you've got your PGA, you've got the Sunshine Tour, you've got an Asian tour. So there's hundreds of guys actually in golf making a pretty good living.
Yeah.
In tennis, it really does, as I say, fall off at 100. And it's tough and it's so expensive because you're traveling with a coach. If you're trying to do it properly, you're paying for them. So, yeah.
Yeah, I remember the Irish Open, the golf Irish Open came to Kilkenny in the mid-90s. It was the Murphy's or the Carroll's Irish Open when cigarette companies could sponsor these things.
It's betting companies now.
And, that's totally fine. It's all legit. And like that, the guys kind of lower down the rankings were kind of driving their own camper vans. You know, and I kind of was reminded a bit of that in the, you know, that felt a bit more like the tennis world you knew. Golf has changed since then.
Yeah,
the money has kind of percolated down.
I wish I'd had a camper van.
It would have made it easier at times.
But yeah, again, I suppose the fact that we're an island off an island here, off continental Europe. And I do think it is a little bit easier for those European guys. They can jump in a car and play tournaments at the outset of their career a lot easier.
Yeah.
So we were getting on flights. And again, I was conscious in this book not to be, you know, whining the whole time either, because you don't want to listen to me kind of whinging about the pro tour for 250 pages. It is funny. And there's, you know, I think there's a humor in this book as well. And I think we found that balance.
I know there is. And I really enjoyed it. And I like that focus on the other 99%, and the fact that the Goldens are they're characters in the book, but it's kind of it's an insider's view, but from the outside inside, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well,
if that's not too oxymoronic.
I'm a fly on the wall and I see them, but they don't necessarily see me. Now, obviously I did play Djokovic at the US Open, but a lot of my insights are I'm in the locker room sort of observing them, I suppose. And I think the appeal for Penguin, what kind of, from this, I have a degree in English, and was, you know, when I kind of produced the notes, there was a lot of detail in it, and I was able to write, and obviously that helped a lot. Then had Gavin Cooney from the 42.ie, and we kind of finished it together, and we were a great collaboration. But I think that level of detail is really important to the book.
The governing bodies in tennis and in Ireland and sports governing bodies kind of feature at different times in the book, and yeah, you know, there's interesting aspects we could pick apart. It seems like kind of Sport Ireland have a more robust kind of anti-doping system than kind of tennis's governing bodies, it seems, lower down the ranks, is one element that stuck out for me.
Yeah, I got tested, by Sport Ireland, you know, very regularly. But when I was actually on the Pro Tour, it was maybe two or three times I was blood tested at the Roland Garros 1 year. There was a couple of infrequent tests, but Sport Ireland, it was much more regular again because I was on that funding program. But I think that has improved at the main tour level. I do see sort of information of top players who be getting tested once a month or so. But again, this is from the perspective of me kind of playing in that sort of late 2008, 2012 was sort of my heyday.
But the other way in which those governing bodies feature as well is sometimes in a kind of an almost obstructionist way.
Yeah, I mean, there was obviously a couple of incidents in terms of I reached out for help a couple of times. There wasn't a great tournament structure in Ireland. I was figuring it out on my own, and I was born in England. And I make the point in the book that, you know, I had a British passport. Technically, I could have declared for Britain and availed of all sorts of funding and wild cards. Made my Davis Cup debut for Ireland at 18 and played for Ireland proudly. But, you know, the difference between coming from a Grand Slam country and the funds that they can that have at their disposal and the wild cards makes for a really uneven playing field, really.
Yeah, but, you know, and I guess we are a small country and it's not a huge population and you can't be great at all sports. It does seem we under-deliver on the tennis front, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think I say that. Again, our expectations are probably pretty low and I still think we underachieve. Yeah. And I do think it's a lack of tournaments in the country is a huge issue. Like, we don't have a main tour event. I think we have one futures event on this year, which means that any aspiring players need to be travelling, which is the expense, but also means that it's not in the media as much either. We will get focused on Wimbledon a couple of weeks here, but if there was a main ATP or WTA event in the country, it could be something that everyone could get behind.
But how many kids are out running around the garden pretending to be Rashida Adelecki because they can see her?
Exactly. No, totally. And I just think it would be something that we could really, we could pull an awful lot from it. Not only just the wild cards and the prize money that they would get from those main tour events, but as you say, it's the visibility factor.
Yeah, listen, I highly recommend it. The Racket is the name of it by Conor Nyland. Listen, you mentioned Wimbledon. Before I let you go, I'm sure you'll be doing a bit of work in and around it and a bit of promotion of the book as well. Are you looking forward to it? Do you look forward to big tennis tournaments now? I mean, what does the sport mean to you?
Yeah, I found it hard to watch the couple of years after Wimbledon when I lost in the five sets in the first round. But no, I love it. It's a special place. And even if I go there through the year when the tournament isn't on, it's still got a special aura, Wimbledon. And it'll be interesting. I think the draw just got announced today. So I think Sinner and Alcaraz are in the same half. And Djokovic, who had surgery 3 weeks ago, is in the other half. So it'll be interesting to see if he can finish the tournament out healthy. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Sinner win it. But no, I'm looking forward to it. It's always fun. I'm over there next weekend. So yeah, can't wait.
All right. Well, listen, enjoy it. And congratulations again on the book.
Thanks, Kieran. Cheers.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.